Hello everybody and welcome back to the Damage Report. I'm gonna keep it real with you. Thank God it's Friday, oh geez. And that means we got bread.
Speaking of oh geez, I'll tell you what. Something you should know about the behind the scenes on this show. Ain't Sophie gone.
Yes.
She moved on to greener pastures. Yes.
We have a Angel, video up saying goodbye to her.
Angel not here today.
Yeah, not gone, but not here.
Not, she's on PTO. Mm-hmm. And so it's me and Asher behind the scenes, mm-hmm. you know, doing the pre-production work.
Yeah.
And we tried our hardest.
Yeah, but we'll see.
I may have messed something up terribly. And poor Asher's gonna have to fix it. So if something's wrong, it's my fault. And the only reason that the pre-production made its way to production is because Asher figured out my insanity.
Thank you, Asher.
So know that ahead of time. It's been a minute since I've done the things I've done on this show.
It has, even though you created a lot of those things.
Before we get into the news, I do want to say happy half hour to this week is amazing. Sam Morril is a comedian who's done like Conan and Colbert. He dishes on what it was like when he was younger. He was an intern on the Colbert Report and he shares what that was like. Mm-hmm. In addition to a bunch of other random stuff. It was really fun, so tonight.
I miss the Colbert Report. I really do. I wish that was still on. I mean, I like Colbert, but I miss the Colbert Report. Anyway, we don't have the Colbert Report, but we do have the Damage Report. And so through the course of this episode of the Report, we are gonna have a couple of different guests. We're gonna have a candidate. Also, we're gonna talk about voter suppression with an individual who was featured in a documentary about that subject. We've got news from around the world. And meanwhile, we're gonna be closing out the week in the way that we have been lately. With Brett and I each choosing a garbage person of the week. So we're gonna see. I've polled the audience and they were pretty uniform in who they suggested. So we'll see if that name pops up in one of our two lists. But before we get to all that, let's have just a little bit of fun, okay? Let's talk about Donald Trump and his latest rally. Donald Trump had thousands of his fans in front of him. He's facing potentially a difficult re-election campaign. And so what's on his mind? Well, what you'd expect. The Oscars.
By the way, how bad were the Academy Awards this year? Did you see? And the winner is a movie from South Korea. What the hell was that all about? We got enough problems with South Korea, with trade. On top of it, they give him the best movie of the year. Was it good? I don't know. You know, I'm looking for like, let's get Gone with the Wind. Can we get like Gone with the Wind back, please? Sunset Boulevard, so many great movies. The winner is from South Korea. I thought it was best foreign film, right? Best foreign movie. No, it was the button. Did this ever happen before?
No, it hasn't.
Let's get a bittersweet take on the death of the old South back.
I know, like if... Is it just he's an old dude with old movie references, or is it entirely intentional that he picked like this ode to slavery?
No. I think that is reading too deep into it.
Well, a simpler question.
Yeah.
Has he seen Gone with the Wind?
Yes, yeah.
You think so?
Okay,
I have not seen Gone with the Wind.
I think he's been in a room where Gone with the Wind was on.
Yeah. Like, you think he sits down to watch 4 hour long movies?
Everyone's gravitating. No, there's no way. But I'm sure he has at some point. Or like it's been on, you know, TBS Classics at some point and he was like, I guess it's on in the background. I don't give a damn, but like everyone's gravitating toward like the slavery segregationist aspect of Gone with the Wind. However, like there is one particular scene in Gone with the Wind where Rhett Butler just picks up Scarlett O'Hara and like takes her upstairs to do things that she is literally fighting him off from doing.
Okay, I haven't seen the movie, so I didn't know that.
Very misogynistic in that scene.
So you think he does watch the movie technically, but it's just that scene?
This is just like his tight five on movies these days. Mm-hmm. Like, did you, and I like the response of everyone in the audience. He's like, did you like the Oscars? And they're like looking around. He's like, terrible, huh? And they're like, you're right, yeah. That's what I think.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, because if we believe him, nobody watches the Oscars. So why would they have an opinion on it? If we believe him, he didn't watch the Oscars, although he went in depth in talking about multiple things that happened there. I want to talk a little bit about Parasite, because he attacked Parasite. Really fast, though, I do think that what you just saw as like a quick summary of the conservative movement, this movement that loves to talk about the left getting triggered by things, it's a guy who didn't see a movie complaining about it to a chorus of boos from people who also didn't see that movie. Mm-hmm. That's the intellectual seriousness with which the conservative movement attacks the day. But yeah, he didn't see it. I have a theory. I think it's a movie. First of all, it's an international movie. He doesn't like international movies, and he would equally complain if it was like, you know, a movie from Britain that won. He'd definitely complain about that too, right? It's not that it's outside of the Western world. But Neon, who I believe distributed Parasite, they have a theory. They tweeted out, understandable, he can't read. Which is great. And by the way, as sort of like, this is a couple weeks ago now, but Bong Joon-ho, the director of Parasite, said when he was accepting one of his awards for it, he says, once you overcome the 1-inch tall barrier of subtitles, you will be introduced to so many more amazing films. It's 100% right. And I, by the way, like, the MAGA movement has been left behind by these economic elites that are out of touch and don't care about them. You hate Parasite, which is a movie about class warfare and how people are left behind. Like, and all, like, they should love that movie.
Yeah, subtitles are great. After having Vertigo on the show last night, or last week, I went home and watched all of Narcos Mexico Part 2. Mm-hmm. And the joy of kind of speaking Spanish and reading those lower thirds is just how many of the cuss words don't make it into the subtitles. It's amazing.
Yeah. It
is just a filthy, filthy language that they use the whole time. And only like a third of the like bad words make it into the subtitles.
It's lost in translation.
But yeah, that's absolutely right. And he did not watch, he admits that he didn't watch this movie, which just shows that everybody there is just there to hate stuff. Mm-hmm. Just there to hate stuff.
More of that, yeah. Yeah, and by the way, so obviously the main villain in this is Donald Trump, but the secondary villain is Brett Ehrlich. Watch Parasite, you weirdo. Why haven't you seen it yet?
Wow, it's nice to be under the
bus. It's a good movie.
I didn't say that I haven't seen it yet, have I?
I'm pretty sure you've seen it. We talked about this morning. Have you seen it?
I'm just saying like to the audience.
Okay, well, he hasn't seen it.
I don't mean to lie to you. I just omit truths.
Over this?
Conveniently.
Anyway, that was not the only bit of the Oscars that he was frustrated with. Donald Trump took issue at his rally last night with a particular speaker at the Academy Awards, which I will remind you, he is talking about this at a presidential rally about a pop culture event that happened weeks ago. But here's what he had to say about one of the speakers.
And then you have Brad Pitt. I was never a big fan of his. He got up and said a little wise guy statement. Little wise guy. He's a little wise guy.
So, it's ridiculous.
John, you're okay. You're going to make it. I know you loved A River Runs Through
Brad Pitt.
It.
I've never actually seen that. But Fight Club is good.
Was good in 1990.
Good. I bet it holds up okay. That's not the chief concern here. There are other good Brad Pitt movies. But Brad Pitt, in his acceptance speech for his award, which it was a great acceptance speech, by the way, he made some reference to Trump. I honestly don't even remember what it was, but I know one person who does remember, and that's Donald Trump, because he's still thinking about it. And by the way, in this critique of Brad Pitt and Parasite that he's been doing, bear in mind, Donald Trump is desperate to be involved in these sorts of movies. Like, think of the cameos he's done in, it was Home Alone, he was in a Wall Street movie, one other movie too. Like, he desperately wants to be accepted by these people. And Brad Pitt, a wise guy? Like, if I was going to insult Brad Pitt, I could think of 100 things that would be more appropriate than wise guy.
And I believe it was Matt Damon who outed Donald Trump on why he's in all those movies.
Oh, I don't remember this.
So I'm pretty sure it was Matt Damon, but forgive me if I'm wrong. And John will call me out for it later on the show. Matt Damon, who said that if you want to shoot on a Trump property, then he has to have a cameo that you have to shoot. So if in Home Alone 2, they wanted to shoot on a Trump property, they needed to shoot it. Now, you don't have to use it in a movie. So like, I think Scent of a Woman or some similar movie from that era was forced to shut everything down so that they can dedicate a day of shooting and toss tens, if not hundreds of thousands, probably tens of thousands of dollars into shooting a scene and allowing Donald Trump to come and say, hoo-ah, to like as he walks by Al Pacino and leaves. So he gets to meet everybody.
He wants to meet them.
When you say it's a sad, pathetic attempt to be included and getting very frustrated and spiteful when he eventually is you know, omitted from something, that is absolutely right. It's even contractual at certain points.
Yeah, and look, I get it. Because like I can look at Trump and I can see how badly this guy just wants to be in that room, because I really want to be in that room.
Yeah.
Like I'm so into movies these days. It would be so cool to be at the Oscars and have them like if Brad Pitt got up on the stage to accept his award and he talks about his family and then he says how much John Iadarola sucks, I would break down crying probably. No, I'm kidding. I wouldn't actually, but I think I can put myself in his place. And anyway, it's just like it's another one of those things where, and we've identified a million of these over the past few years, where how does this audience, how can they not see the projection here and how dishonesty is being fundamentally about the desperation seated deep in his heart to be loved by these people. He had a TV show because he wants to be liked by these people. Anyway, but they couldn't see it. Okay, with that, I do think we have to take our first break though.
Yes.
I don't think we're gonna get to the Greta thing, unfortunately, but he was talking about the Time Person of the Year thing again.
I would just say that go watch that Greta clip because, as John said, it's the whiny. He whines about Greta. Mm-hmm. And so, in one sense, Pete Buttigieg has big whine caves. Trump has giant wine caves, but it's whine wine rallies.
Yes.
Boo through the thing. Oh, that was a good one.
I thought I heard a boo.
I heard like a.
No, it's they were not saying boo horns. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. When we come back, lots more after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Not long ago, we had filmmaker Robert Greenwald on the program to talk about his recent film, Suppressed: The Fight to Vote, that details a variety of different attempts at voter suppression in the 2018 midterms in Georgia. We had a great conversation. Definitely go and you can find that on our YouTube channel. But now I'm very excited to welcome onto the show Norman Broderick, featured in that documentary. Norman, welcome to the Damage Report.
Great, thank you.
Glad to have you here. And you know, I want people to sort of understand the different forms that this voter suppression took in this election. So tell us a little bit about your story and what was revealed in the documentary.
My story is like many others who tried to vote through absentee ballot. And I guess there was a situation where either they weren't receiving the absentee ballot or the absentee ballots were sent to the wrong address. In my case, it was just sent to the wrong address. They admitted that they were at fault, and it seems like they took no realistic or tangible steps to fix the process.
And so you had voted via absentee ballot in the past before without these sorts of problems?
That's correct. When I was active duty military and deployed overseas, I voted through absentee ballot, didn't have any issues. And I was surprised. I was just one state over in South Carolina, and for some reason they couldn't get that right to send it to my address there.
So what I'm confused about is they, as you said, they admitted fault And yet nothing appears to have been done to fix the situation. And look, obviously for you as an individual, it's terrible that they effectively invalidated your vote. But we also know that this is, you're one of many people who have experienced the same problem, potentially affecting the outcome of the race. Since the election, has there been anything that they have said that has reassured you that if you were to vote absentee in the upcoming election, potentially, that there's any more chance that it would actually be counted?
I'm glad you asked that question, because no, they never offered any realistic explanation as to why they admitted fault, but no solutions to fix the problem. And it is kind of scary because I'm set to leave in May, and I'll be gone until the middle of November. So this coming election, I will have to vote absentee. Mm-hmm. And I'm deeply concerned that this situation may repeat itself.
So, if you had to overall say, how much confidence do you have that it'll be counted this time?
I have no confidence that it'll be counted this time.
Okay, well, that's depressing, and no American should have to experience that, especially while you're serving your country. So one of the other things that I'm interested in is obviously coming out of that, the 2018 election in Georgia and around that suppression, you've had some people taking it seriously. Stacey Abrams, she started an organization to fight against it. I personally haven't heard a lot from the Democrats running for president about voting rights and trying to fix this. Have you seen anything that gives you confidence that if we get a different president, they might change things, or do you feel like it's being ignored?
I don't know if it's being ignored. I haven't seen a lot of Democratic hopefuls talking about voter suppression and any fixes or anything being addressed on that front. But I don't know if it's a situation either they don't know or it hasn't gotten up that far to where they could talk about it and hopefully take some action.
Yeah, and it seems like not only is it the right thing to do, every American should be able to vote, but you would imagine that it would be in their own interests. If elections are potentially swinging on voter suppression, why would you want to run and not address that? Like, it would be in your own interest as a party or as an individual to do something about it. So it seems sort of self-defeating.
Well, that is correct. And I don't want to think that it's because of the population of the people who are more affected by it. That's why the voices are not being heard. I would surely would not like to have that thought be a realization.
I share that same feeling. I'm curious, so we talked about the issue with the absentee ballot. Have you experienced in any other elections any apparent or obvious attempts to suppress your vote?
No, this was the first time that that's happened to me. And once again, I don't have any assurance, and I'm kind of worried about this upcoming election because I'm going to have to vote absentee.
Yeah. Well, look, I certainly hope that there's someone watching out inside of Georgia to make sure that the situation doesn't happen again the same way. And Norman Broderick, we want to thank you for joining us and sharing your story.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. And for anyone interested in the film, it's Suppress the Fight to Vote by Brave New Films. Robert Greenwald, as we said, was interviewed on the show previously. And if you'd like to see it, set up a screening, that information is available online. Just look for Suppress the Fight to Vote in Brave New Films. And with that, we are going to take a break. We come back, news from around the world in Meanwhile In. And now it's time for news from around the world in Meanwhile In. Meanwhile in India, ahead of Donald Trump's apparent trip to the country, which I can't believe is even happening, they're apparently having a bit of a preemptive pest control problem. So one of the things that's going to happen during this trip is that Trump and Melania are going to visit the Taj Mahal. And it turns out there are some fairly aggressive animals around that particular tourist site. Racist macaques have a reputation for being very aggressive towards the 25,000 tourists who visit it every day. That is an amazing number of people. Also apparently an amazing number of macaques. So police are going to be armed with slingshots. Officers assigned to Trump's visit will be armed with the devices to chase off any monkeys that menace the president and First Lady Melania. They say, though, the weapons work on monkeys individually or in small groups, but they're completely ineffective in warding off packs of marauding macaques. And one resident of the town of Agra says, the terror of the monkeys is so pervasive that women and children are scared of going up on the roof of their houses, which have almost been taken over by monkeys. If such a large troop of monkeys attacks Donald Trump's entourage, it will be a disaster.
I just want you to know.
It's a crazy story.
As much as you make fun of me for not watching certain things and you get triggered by it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How do you not know it's macaques?
Okay.
You gotta watch some Planet Earth. You gotta watch Human Planet because it really reveals the true terror that these rhesus macaques are. They are extremely aggressive. Mm-hmm. They get violent. They like are smarter than squirrels. So that's what it's compared to when people go visit these places. Like,
how big of a pack are we talking in your Planet Earth experience?
So, like gangs. I think the term is actually a gang of macaques.
Macaques. Are you happy now? Yes.
So
one thing you need to know about macaques, he's told you. One thing you need to know about him is he has watched literally every one of those shows on Netflix.
The macaque stands outside the market.
So two things. One, it is absurd that hypothetically their fear is that like the limo will be covered with primates hitting it.
Which happens.
Which happens. And look, in the story, like, they talk about like babies being taken and killed by these animals, and that is obviously horrifying. The other is how many people traveling in the Trump entourage are just hoping that these animals will attack so that they can start going crazy with their guns.
Well, slingshots, definitely.
Well, the police will have slingshots. We'll see about Trump's entourage. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, absurd news. Meanwhile, in Africa, I wanted to update you just a little bit on a story we talked about a couple of weeks ago on the main show, and that is the spread of just devastating swarms of locusts in a number of countries in East Africa. I want you to take a look at this graphic. We're gonna put it up there and you're gonna see how they've been spreading through an entire region of the world, threatening crops and theoretically threatening millions of people in the area with starvation. So I want to talk a little bit about locusts because there's a very clear connection here to climate change as well. So the immediate issue is devastating. The likelihood that what we're doing to the climate will make this sort of thing more common in the future also devastating. So the insects thrive following periods of heavy rainfall that trigger blooms of vegetation across their normally arid habitats in Africa and the Middle East. And so here's where it gets interesting. It has to do with the life cycle of locusts and their reproduction patterns. So desert locusts live for about 3 months. After a generation matures, the adults lay their eggs, which under the right conditions can hatch to form a new generation up to 20 times larger than the previous one. Ultimately, two cyclones in 2018 enabled three generations of wildly successful locust breeding in just 9 months, increasing the number of insects at 8,000-fold. In that particular case. And so what normally happens is the right sort of weather to lead to a bloom of these happens rarely. So a bloom will happen and then they'll all die off. But with wetter weather being driven by extreme weather events being driven by climate change, those events are now pushed together so they can happen in quick succession. So you don't have 20 times as many, you have 8,000 times as many. And that means that like a single locust swarm comes into a farmer's field. In half a day, it's eaten the entire field. The livelihood of that farmer, as well as possibly their access to food, has been cut off. And the thing is, this is obviously a disaster for the region that we showed you in that picture, but it isn't limited to East Africa. There are swarms in Pakistan now, as well as Somalia too. And so they're starting to spread throughout the region as more and more of these cyclones and other weather events are leading to blossoms of locusts.
Locusts are no joke, man. Mm-hmm. As I noticed when I watched Planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I'm getting the idea I should watch that show.
It's so many shows, John.
Yeah.
But as like picture, if you haven't seen it, just picture in your mind devastation from grasshoppers.
Mm-hmm.
And they always say as a metaphor, like, oh, it's like it's like locusts coming in. It's the plague of locusts. It's next to frogs and the Ten Commandments.
And boils.
Or the Bible or the whatever. But it is just as it's way more terrible than you even imagine going in.
Mm-hmm.
They show like the skies filling up with locusts where you cannot see through at all. And then just the idea that it's just a bunch of grasshoppers just like eating grass And then when it's done, it leaps ahead of all the rest of them and devastates everybody. It is so incredibly destructive that like it rivals man in terms of what it does to people, to the environment. Like it is nuts.
Yeah. And in this case, potentially our responsibility. And so this sort of devastating event that's been going on for multiple months, hasn't really been covered much in the West, is likely to continue because the environment that gave rise to these is not going away anytime soon. And so in the past years, when we've been talking about how climate change is not just gonna make things hotter, it's not just gonna raise the oceans, it's gonna lead to a ton of strife in multiple regions of the world. Like imagine millions of people are threatened with starvation. Hopefully this will pass. What if it becomes more common? What if it becomes permanent in the region? Multiple millions of people are going to have to leave that entire region. And then what happens after that? What happens when this is happening in multiple parts of the world? That is a disaster, okay, and one that we need to take seriously.
And the things that people in America don't really focus on that sound hyperbolic, but it's not just that. So this is triggered by rains that create larger swarms of locusts. Just also like the other problem of not having fresh water is something that affects uneven, I mean, we hear about it in like Flint and parts of California periodically, but as a growing problem for billions of people in the world to not have access to water, that and like locusts, those are the things that if you're living in America, you run the risk of like just ignoring, but just it does ignoring. Become a global problem.
Yeah, and that's why I want to make sure we gave the update, because I have not seen much in America about this. Meanwhile, in a really uncomfortable transition to Crazy Town, let's talk a little bit about what's going on. Pigeons with tiny Make America Great Again hats glued to their heads were released in downtown Las Vegas this week in what appears to be a sarcastic statement of loyalty to President Donald Trump in a mock protest of Nevada's coming Democratic presidential caucuses. And you can see a little picture.
So you know, it's not just for those of you listening to the podcast.
The hair.
There is not only a number of pigeons with MAGA hats on, which is easy to imagine. There is also a pigeon who seems to be crowned King Pigeon with a Trump like coif atop his dome. Or her dome, I don't know. I can't really identify pigeons.
Yes.
By gender.
So look, in this article they listed as, so the group is called Putin, Pigeons United to Interfere Now.
They claimed responsibility for the stunt. The pigeons were set loose Tuesday, according to the group.
Yes, no, I get that. So I don't know exactly if this is sending the statement that the article says that it's sending, that this is intended to mock the Democrats. Is that who it's mocking, really?
I think it's definitely, I don't know. If you want to hear words from Putin themselves, Putin have used their pigeons to launch a one of a kind aerial protest piece in response to the arrival of 2020 Democratic presidential hopefuls. The release date was also coordinated to serve as a gesture of support and loyalty to Trump. So you're saying it is.
Does it actually do that? Like I get that's what they
quite
wanted.
Pigeon phobic.
Am I trying to pigeonhole their act of protest?
Pigeons are, by all accounts, rats of the sky. No one is like, hey, please compare me to a pigeon. I want that. I want my image next to or equivalent to like the group where you're like, get away from my lunch.
Yeah. If they're even nearby, they ruin a meal.
Yeah, this is not the first time that in the Vegas area someone has
glued
things to pigeon heads. It was little cowboy hats, which was really tore me apart because I'm like, they look hilarious, they look funny, but it is so mean to do to a pigeon.
To do to any animal.
To do that to
don't glue animals. As a general rule, that's rule number 7 of the damage report. Don't glue an animal.
Don't glue any animals. You know, glue is made of animals, FYI.
Yeah. The inverse of Portlandia's, put a bird on it. Don't put it on a bird, basically. Leave the birds alone.
But I totally see it. Like, if I see this flock of pigeons swarming toward me, I would just look at it and be like, oh, this is obviously making fun of the whatever it is, flock of Trump supporters who look ridiculous in their MAGA hats. I wouldn't, I, and It's just so terrible, but it is in line with everything that I come to know about people who would go to a Trump rally.
That is definitely true. Okay, with that, we're gonna take another break. We come back, a candidate is gonna join us. We'll be talking with Skylar Hurwitz after this.
Animals are innocent.
Joining us now is a candidate for Pennsylvania's 1st District, Skylar Hurwitz. Welcome to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Doing pretty well. A bit busy.
I can understand why, and we're hopefully going to get into all of that. There's a number of topics that are sort of that I want to talk about you that are specific to your background, that you have a different perspective than a lot of other candidates do because of your background. But sketch that out for people who might not be familiar with you.
Sure. Thanks again for having me on. So my name is Skylar Hurwitz, and I am the progressive candidate here in Pennsylvania's 1st congressional district. I was endorsed by Our Revolution Pennsylvania and our local Sunrise Movement chapter. So I've built really my whole career on environmental issues. I went to American University, studied global environmental policy. I work on solar grants under the Obama administration and worked at Conservation International, where I managed a $40 million fund of projects in Southeast Asia and Western and Southern Africa that were primarily projects that were meant to build the self-sufficiency of local groups there to actually take care of those environmental issues themselves. And so I've seen a major lack of anyone talking about these types of issues. I was just actually at, we have here a quarry, a Rock Hill Quarry, where there is naturally occurring asbestos in the ground, and there is a factory for asphalt there, and a number of other products. So I was just out actually at a press conference for that because there's just not enough attention being brought to these issues. So I felt that as the candidate born and raised here, it was time to bring those types of policy solutions front and center, since it's so important really to voters of my generation in order for us to feel like we have something to vote for and to fight for in terms of, you know, a habitable planet in the coming years. So that's what this campaign's all about empowering the voters to really have a voice. And I'm excited to be the one who is, you know, sitting here in this position to be able to represent them.
So I certainly agree with you that you know, I haven't talked to many candidates this cycle that are coming from this particular perspective, having worked as a technology consultant. But also, like, when I think about like the current House of Representatives, I can't think of many people necessarily. Are you familiar with many people in elected office right now that come from this point of view, and what might it mean to have someone in elected office that understands these issues in a slightly different way?
So I think you kind of nailed on just a little bit of the experience that I didn't express a moment ago, which is that I do run my own technology consulting firm. My experience really began in environmental issues and environmental policy, and then moved into this emerging technology sector. And so I would honestly say no. When I see Mark Zuckerberg in Congress being asked questions, I sometimes wonder if some of these people even know how to start their own email or if they could log into their Facebook, because it frankly is painful to listen to the types of questions that are being asked, especially because some of the issues we're talking about here, I mean, the emerging technologies I work on are ones that a lot of people tend to kind of just like not take too seriously, to be honest with you. It's the digital currencies, you know, things like the Libra project they're talking about at Facebook. I was helping write standards at the only United Nations sub-agency that's a public-private partnership. I was helping write the standards for this new technology there. And so that's where I think we need someone who truly can ask Facebook the questions they need to be asked and then regulate them accordingly. And I'm just, I'm not confident that we have those representatives there right now.
So let's focus on that for 1 second. So the Libra currency, these sorts of emerging new tech currencies, why is this something that people should be worried about and that they should want to have elected representatives that understand it on more than sort of a shallow basis?
Absolutely. So this technology has really been about democratizing how we transfer value. It's been about allowing, if we don't trust these banks from the 2008 crisis, basically we should be able to validate these transactions ourselves. And that's kind of what some of these other types of currencies have done. For example, Ethereum or Bitcoin, which I'm not a particular fan of. But they're at least meant to allow anyone to participate in that process of validating transactions. So it's supposed to take the power from the banks and give it to the people. Now, the problem is that Facebook is usurping that type of technology and able to say, look, at a fundamental level, this is democratizing. This is, you know, making it safer how we secure your data. But really, Facebook will have a monopoly over a certain aspect of that. And so we need someone who can actually understand that while there might be certain things that are good about a technology on the surface level, it only really works depending who's controlling it. And when a monopoly is controlling it, we're actually not looking at that technology being benefit. It actually could be more harmful than it is good, because it would allow for really an extreme level of censorship by one set of organizations. Okay. And that is something that is really counterintuitive to the whole CryptoPunk kind of cypherpunk movement that really existed, cypherpunk movement that really existed for getting this technology developed in the first place. It was an anti-establishment type of movement. And if we don't hold them accountable, then we actually lose the ability to regulate to a certain degree. That's the new thing about this technology, is that it takes this power where we used to trust the banks or trust one specific organization like Amazon to store all their data for the cloud. It says we should not have to trust one company to look at the data, like the history of that, and trust that that's the real history of those documents on their cloud. We shouldn't be giving all the power to these companies. We should be ensuring that everyone's data is legitimate at all times. And again, if we don't have someone in there, even right now, in 2 seconds or 2 minutes or 8 minutes we have for this interview, I can't fully get into all of it. It requires someone who can really ask a series of targeted questions mm-hmm. to hone down into how are they going to set it up at an infrastructure level? Because that's what we're talking about, is the technology can sound great, but it's how the infrastructure is actually set up and implemented that could define whether or not this is a net benefit for society or a net loss.
And I know in your sketching out your history, you mentioned working on multiple environment related projects, including, I believe you said, under the Obama administration. Can you tell us, if you were to win your election, what is some of what you'd like to see done in regards to the environment, the climate crisis, those issues?
Absolutely. So yeah, as the sole supporter of the Green New Deal here, I believe we need to build on, it was called the Solar Sunshot Initiative under the Obama administration. And what they were looking to do was basically 60% of the cost of solar were from the permitting process, the contracting process. And we were trying to pilot ways in 10 different states around the country to cut into those costs so we could get to the real cost of solar. And so I believe we've made a significant amount of progress on that front. And now what we need to see is a larger scale investment in rolling out residential and community level solar and wind. And so in that sense, I'm in favor of what I call an Electricity for All program. And this is essentially a 10-year program of low interest financing from the government to homeowners and communities to basically establish their own renewable energy, either production on the rooftop or community array themselves. Utilities are something that are very American, that are how much of the rural electrification of this country occurred. And when we're looking at upgrading and modernizing our infrastructure, this just makes sense. And we have the potential to create millions of jobs doing it. And that's where in my district, we just have to really talk about that transition plan, because PA is such a heavy natural gas state. That's what everyone's afraid of talking about here, is what happens to those jobs. And so that's why I've put forward what I call the Jobs on Sustainable Human Activities Program, which is a five-year retraining initiative to help ensure that the workers here in my state and in my district end up in those jobs of tomorrow and not left behind.
Okay. And Skylar, where can people find out more about your platform?
Absolutely. So you can find out more about my platform at skylarforcongress.com or skylarforcongress.com/issues. And you can read all about what I call the Fair Tax Platform, which is really my main funding mechanism for all of these different progressive policies, right there as well with all the tax rates. And we're up against a lot of big money here, a lot of establishment power that is trying to push us out of the race. My opponent, who had the most money, was just pushed out of the race yesterday under some unfortunate circumstances. And so I'm really calling on progressives around the country to get involved in this race. This is going to be one of the most important races of the election cycle here in PA and in the country at large. This is really a bellwether district. And so if you're looking to make a big impact, we have a massive opportunity right now as progressives. This is a district that's usually considered off limits because it's purple and it's a little bit on the wealthier side, but we have a chance here to make a real change. And so I'm truly calling on progressives around this country to get involved in any way you see fit, whether that's writing letters to the editor, whether that's making donations, whether that's just passing my link around to your friends and family. So I just am appreciative of the Young Turks existing as an outlet for campaigns like mine to get our voices heard. So thank you so much.
Skylar Hurwitz, thank you so much for joining us today. Really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. Hope to be back. Thank you.
We're going to take one last break here, and then we'll close out the week with Garbage People after this. Now it's time to take out the trash. This is Garbage People. It just keeps going and going. So, garbage has piled up throughout the week, and now it's Friday. And so we've each chosen one little bit to toss in the can.
Just really quick question. Is it garbage-est or garbage-iest? I was very conflicted.
I think...
Garbagiest?
Garbagiest,
okay,
I
good.
Think.
Good.
Although Ooh. Then it doesn't sound like garbage anymore. But these people do. And so we've each chosen one. I polled the audience and there was an overwhelming favorite. And I love to surprise you, but unfortunately I can't this week. My garbage person for the week couldn't be anyone other than Mike Bloomberg. I mean, is it?
No, it's not mine.
Oh, okay. Mike Bloomberg.
A little on the nose if you ask me.
Well, we'll find out what yours is. I mean, there were other bad people, but Mike Bloomberg not only had such an arrogant, terrible performance at the debate where he sort of mocked the idea of sexual harassment as just women who are frustrated with a joke or something. He's not gonna let them out of their NDAs, not because it's not the right thing to do, but because he doesn't want to hurt him in his election. And then we've learned more and more about who he is. I mean, his stance on anyone who is not a white, straight, cis male has been horrific over the past few decades. But then, like, let's say you're not interested in that sort of stuff. You should be. But if you're not, his previous positions on minimum wage, living wage, healthcare, NSA spying, foreign policy, Palestinian right to live, even, let alone any other rights, is just horrible. And so he is this week, but should probably be every week for a good time in the future, my garbage person.
Good for you, John. That was cathartic to see
someone. It was. I feel a little bit better.
Anyone's face. Mine, I put two in there, but here's the one that I thought you mentioned this guy earlier.
I don't even know who it is yet.
Pete Hegseth.
Oh.
Pete Hegseth works for Fox and Friends. And first of all, he's a garbage person because he can't pick a sticker correctly. This says big government sucks, but the way the fonts are set up, it just looks like big sucks. Which isn't true. Harry sucks.
No,
Aiden's right.
I think he's saying he hates that classic 80s comedy movie, which I thought was just a great introduction to Tom Hanks.
Thank you. And it is great. And you obviously didn't watch Bosom Buddies, Under the Bus, John, Under the Bus.
I did not.
Bachelor
so tell
Party.
Me why.
Anyway, so Pete Hegseth recently, he said that the real agents of Russia's are Democrats and media reporting on election interference.
That makes sense.
Basically saying that it's not the folks, the Russia isn't the baddies for trying to meddle in our election. It's people who inform anyone that this is actually happening mm-hmm. are the ones meddling in our election. He says this is an attempt to discredit President Trump. That's it. Delegitimize him all the way. That's why he wins again. It's like, dude, it's not the crime. It's the cover up, it's the crime, and it's the people who are trying to cover it up. So,
yes, it's both.
Hegseth in the garbaggio. Watch Happy Half Hour tonight.
Yes. Thank you, Brett. Always good to have you here, and especially to close out the week. Thank you, everybody who's been watching. Next week, lots of stuff is going to happen. So, see you then.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.